Sorry, I don't usually have to do that, but it's so cold outside. Your neck stretches. Now it's nice and warm in here. It's chilly.
Thank you. We'll be right back. got about 30 minutes left before school is out. This is kind of traditional for the other situation we have like this, is give you a chance to ask them some questions. And so I've got a wireless mic here. I'll come up and down the road and put my hand up, and I'll try to get to everybody. Would you guys want to sit down? Come sit down. Grab a couple of chairs, bring them up here, and if you've got extra water. Once again, give another hand. Here's the protocol. Say your name before you ask the question. And ask very clearly, very loudly, and then pass the mic to me.
Howdy.
Hey.
My name is Cody Garrett, and I want to go into the music business. I do a lot of country, kind of rock. And what do you have to offer, or what advice do you have towards someone who's looking to go
into guys or anybody else out in the audience?
My advice is just to keep at it. It's a lot harder than it looks. A few people get really lucky, and in my opinion, unlucky, to make it when they're very young. I.G. Kurt Cobain. The music industry can really eat you up alive, and there's a lot of pitfalls to it that you see the older you get, and you tend to fall into them when you're young. We did too. The good ones survive. Just be really true to what you do. Try to find your own style. Everybody has a million influences that come in and out of their lives, and it kind of all becomes you and creates what you want to do with music yourself. So that's kind of necessary. But just trust your own instincts and just keep at it. Try to surround yourself with a group of people that motivates you and is looking for the same goals instead of tearing you down and, again, self-destructive. Playing in a band is like any other relationship. And it needs to be a good one. If it's not, you're not going to get anywhere, and it's just going to go downhill and frustrate you and make you want to stop.
And be true to your love that you... Is this on?
Yeah.
Chef, 1, 2. Is it coming out?
Nope, we can hear you anyway.
We can hear you.
It's okay. Anyway, just make sure that, you know, what you're doing, because you love it. Because if you're doing it for the money or you're doing it for any other reason other than the fact that you love it, there's no reward.
It doesn't work.
It doesn't work at all.
You can hear the acoustics.
You can probably hear that.
Yeah, I mean, it's persistence and tenacity. Doing it for the right reasons. Sincerity definitely shows through. And I have a lot of one-dimensional people in the music business, and a lot of those people... they might get rich really quick, but then it'll last very long.
Yeah. And if it's a passion, it's something you want to do for the rest of your life. Remember, life is long, or it should be. And you want to make it last. You don't want it to be over too soon.
Why don't you go ahead and stand and talk loudly.
You're
right.
Okay.
I'm so into people. I just want to know maybe any...
Yeah.
Any memorable shows that you guys have that you'd like to
share with us? Oh, yeah.
Well, it's the first time we played at high school.
Yeah. I played one high school before, but unfortunately, the lead guitar player, this is back in the 70s rock days, decided he was going to rewire the fuse box so they could play really louder than God. Blew up the whole fuse box in the school. Bam! They were out of there. And that was really great playing for you guys. And sorry, now I forgot your question. Oh, memorable gigs. Man, we've all been playing so long. There's so many of them. There's certain towns that just seem to be magic for different bands that you're in. Athens has been one for us. Greece, a bunch of shows in Portland, Seattle, all over the U.S., New York, and Austin, Texas. But the ones that you really, really remember, and if any of you play and have been up on stage before, I don't care what you're doing, dancing, singing, reading poetry, it doesn't really matter. There's a certain electricity that you feel when you're really on and the band's tight and the audience is into it, and this energy flow just goes back and forth. You may not know about it, but until you felt it, it's the biggest rush in the world, better than anything. And those are the ones you always really, really remember. And sometimes you can't remember which night it was on. But we've had a lot of them. Thank God, we're really, really lucky.
incredible. You can have five gigs in a row that are just horrible.
Yeah.
And you have the one that's great. And then you're like, this is why we do it. That's why we did it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Just you're say, oh, that's it. I've had enough. Yeah. And it's like, bam.
You know, like as individuals and as a band, we've all played all over the world on most continents. And there's good stories over the years. You know, you've been here forever.
Favorite country outside
some
of the U.S.
Can't tell you.
Favorite country outside of the U.S.
Favorite
for shows.
Favorite country outside
the
U.S.
For shows.
Boy,
that'd be awesome. I love playing up in Norway. Part of it's just because the audiences are awesome and the country itself is just gorgeous.
Yeah.
Just amazing.
Scandinavia is great. Japan.
Yeah. We have Kelly now.
I don't know. It seems like it's easier to. It's easier to list the countries that have like really lame responses than it is.
Yeah.
You know. I mean.
They're amazing. Yeah.
You know, you can go to Belgium and play to 30 people, and then a couple nights later go back to Germany and play to 500. So it's like, you know.
Yeah. It's all in the ebb and flow. But the cool things
are
nice of the
same. I really enjoyed your cover of Mr. Soul. I was wondering if there was any other covers in there that I didn't spot, or maybe some favorite artists for you to cover other than Neil Young.
Not with this band. We've done a lot of covers. I don't know about Kelly Clay has played in punk bands. He's a punk rock bass player. Fred and I have done a lot of covers over the years. We always like to take a cover and put your own twist on it.
It was an awesome cover.
Make it to where somebody's got to go, God, that sounds familiar. Is that... You know.
Yeah.
So we've kind of changed everything up a bit with different covers.
Well, last year in Europe we did an Elvis song.
Which one?
In the Ghetto?
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
That's good.
But yeah, we've had In Dead Moon, we used to do sort of Blue Cheers cover of Parts of the Farm. We used to do Stand By Your Man. We used to do all kinds of crazy stuff.
Ring of Fire.
Ring of Fire.
The standards.
Remember, yeah, all kinds of different stuff.
Long
Way. Yes. I tell you folks, it ain't as easy as it looks.
It does look very easy.
No.
Hey, Mason Scott.
Go, Scott.
Like the songwriting process, like you just like. Get together and sit down and jam, or you.
He usually comes up with an idea, and then he runs by her because he lives with her. And I tweak with it. You know,
if it makes it fast to you.
Yeah.
Then us three get together on it, and we all just put our twist to it.
Yeah.
You know, and we just hammer away at it, and then we either keep it or toss it or change it or whatever.
You can usually tell in rehearsal whether something's going to work or not. And work for all the members of the band, what needs to be changed. A lot of times we've got this funky little Radio Shack cassette recorder, I mean, way back, and just use one mic, tape it, and then listen back to it and kind of see from an unbiased point what it sounded like. You can tell if it's working or not. And then we usually try to play stuff live and then see what kind of reaction it's getting and either do some more changes or not before we solo.
If people start running for the door or you start the song, you know it's
wrong. Violet.
Yeah, but really recording it on some kind of cheap recording device and then playing it back is the best way to go, because sometimes we'll write something and play it in practice and it just doesn't work and it's just like, oh my God, this is terrible. And then I'll take it home and I'll play it back. And it's like, wow, but you know, what was I thinking? This is great. And it'll turn out to be one of our
favorite songs. Either that or you get an idea where you go, man, this needs another part, it needs a bridge, a different break, too monotonous, this and that. Those ideas come to you then.
That's
great people
do. I just want to know, if you guys have a really good idea, how long does it take to write the song and like perfect it?
Usually really quick. Us as a band, like once it gets to the practice room stage, it's like we're pretty quick. We're, as you can see, there's not a lot of frills to this band, you know. We don't, you know, we just.
But there's some songs that can take forever. I mean, speak for Freddie. Sorry, Gary, sorry, Mike. But with a lot of songs that you write, it's like, especially with lyrics, it's very into lyrics. Both grew up in the 60s when they really matter. And it's a big thing for him. So a lot of times he'll have the song per se, but it's the lyrics that'll take a lot of rewriting, just like any other writing. And that's kind of the one part that a lot of times you get really satisfied with. But usually the basic ideas he comes up with pretty fast. That's big of a hassle.
He's lucky.
I
can't
do that. I can write a few lyrics, but it is
moving there. It's a challenge. Either have it or you don't. I don't.
You're
doing good.
I'm writing
lyrics.
I mean, I'm writing music kind of
things. Just kind of going off what you guys are talking about with lyrics. Fred, you were saying you write most of them. Like, I know it's like some people when they write poetry and lyrics, they have to be like a certain place or wearing a certain thing. Do you have any like weird quirks like that? Like, you need to be in a certain place or listen to something when you put things together?
I put things together sort of two ways. The flow of the lyrics themselves and the melody line, for me, have to, you know, it's all one kind of thing. You can't just, you know, come up with a bunch of work, but you can. But I mean, for me, it's coming up with the right feel of the lyrics. So there's a lot of times I'll have an idea, maybe a song that'll sound like it should be written about death and destruction. But by the time I come up with the right chords to it, it sounds more like it should be a love song or something. I mean, I change a lot of things around because certain melodies just don't fit a certain thing that I have in my head. And so,
well, do you think there's a certain environment that you have to be in to start writing? Like, is there, you know, driving?
I write most of my stuff when I'm driving.
Wait, is there an action in here? Come on.
On the back of grocery sacks or whatever.
Yeah.
If I take Tootie to the grocery store and she tells me it's going to be 15 minutes, I know I got all the time in the world to write a whole hour. 2 hours later, I've got like five songs started. So, but yeah, a lot of it's just a lick will either come in my head or I get an idea of just one line of lyric as a hook.
Yeah.
And then kind of write the music and everything around that. But every song is kind of different. I mean, a lot of it just comes. I really never had to struggle sitting there going, oh God, you know, like writer block or any of that kind of stuff.
Designating so much time each day to work on stuff. It's just like when it comes, it comes. When it doesn't come.
Yeah. It's pretty natural. There's somebody up there that keeps talking.
Besides, he's not
there. I got a real good guardian angel or
something.
Keep the flow going. I am Debbie, and I want to ask you something since you saw the viewer. And I'm just wondering, do you guys have any zombie movie suggestions?
We're all movie buffs. Anything by Dario Argento or George Romero.
Yeah, the original. You know,
except
the original.
For Diary of the Dead. That sucks.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Anything
or
Italian.
Or teenage zombie. The 50s exploitation.
Dario Argento's early Italian stuff. Amazing. From the 70s. He pretty much took the genre, the schlock slasher horror genre, and turned it into an art form. But, yeah. Lucio Fulci. Any the Italians, man, that's where they were at. When they found out they couldn't make any more money off of spaghetti westerns, they turned to zombies. They weren't.
I'm Carlin. Do you guys have like what do you guys think would be your best or favorite
this year?
Yeah.
Again.
Yeah.
Not a lot of room for nostalgia. I don't know about these guys. These guys have more years to look back on than I do.
One of my banner years would always be 1990, just because that's the first time that we had a chance to go and play in Europe, and that was just like, you know, that was just unbelievably amazing. Just to be invited or have somebody from that far away want to know what you were up to, and just this band in the northwest of, you know, the U.S., and didn't really think that anybody
we didn't even have to take the boat. We actually flew us there.
It was one of the first commercial flights I ever had.
Yeah, exactly. Always thought we'd have to work our way over on a tramp steamer. Every year's been awesome for some reason.
Oh, yeah.
interested in Martin, and you guys have all been in different bands and played different styles. Do you guys ever feel pressured to play one type of music, and how do you guys go about it?
I think it's the combination of styles that, I mean, I don't know how it comes across, but we enjoy it, you know. I like it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm glad to be playing something that's a lot different than, you know, a lot of my other bands. And I think, I mean, personally, I think it expands anyone's abilities and challenges people to kind of play a different style of music. I mean, if you're playing the same thing over and over for 20 years, it's a bit stifling, you know.
Well, not only that, as long as, especially in both of us, I've been playing for 30 years myself now, I was a late start. But at some point, you just kind of become an accumulation of all the different types of music that that impressed you and influenced you in any way. I like the versatility of this band. I hear a lot of bands, and I love what they're doing, but after about four songs, every song starts sounding exactly the same to me. So I personally like that, you know, that eclectic kind of conversion to have bands. You know, a lot of people don't say they want to hear the same thing, basically, just that one style. But, I don't know, I love it.
Hey, my name's Jimmy. I was wondering what it was like growing up and being involved in music.
Cool, Kelly, you start with your experience is totally different.
Yeah, mine's different. I mean, I grew up in a very small town in rural Oregon. And for me, music was a real escape from, 1980s, very rigid, redneck Oregon. The very limited choices that were offered to me.
It's all like, have not the habits.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, I was expected to follow a certain path in life, and the choices that I was offered were not even slightly appealing to me, and a certain amount of disaffection and alienation that I felt as a teenager. You know, I didn't have a lot of choice. Music probably literally saved my life. And so, I don't know, it's been a long, long, hard road, but it's, I mean, I've been doing it now, not as long as these guys, but probably, you know, since the late 80s.
Yeah.
And, I've always had a day job.
Yeah.
Don't say, don't quit your day job.
I haven't.
I mean, I'm on tour 5 months out of the year. I still go home, I rent my house, and to me, it's worth every second. I have absolutely no regrets about anything.
For us, Brent and I, grew up, right? I graduated high school in 66, so we were kind of in that full flux of when music really started meaning a lot to kids, and with our generation, there was millions of us. Oh my God, still are. So there was just kind of a lot more people involved in what was going on, but it was still basically the, you know, that 2% fringe element like it always is. And it was really cool to finally get out of high school and appreciate the fact that all of you just kind of tend to gravitate together over time, and I just became involved in music just on the fringe of taking tickets at the door at a venue, and being supportive of the band. We got married, I took everybody in the band house, and this and that, and you know, so it just, just kind of went off from there, and I didn't even start playing bass until I was like 30 years old, so I'm in my second childhood right now. I was nice and responsible when I was really young, now's my time to play.
And for me, my first experience, I was about 9 years old, and my parents went to the Safeway store in Milton, Washington. And on the back of this flatbed truck, this was three country western guys, red cowboy shirts like Tony Scott, and cowboy hats, black cowboy hats, playing guitars. And I'm 9 years old. There's nobody paying any attention to these guys. But I walked up to the edge of the truck. I'm hanging on. I'm looking at these guys. I'm thinking, oh, my God. That is the coolest thing I've ever seen. I've got to do that. Okay. And then I heard Jerry Lee Lewis's version of Great Balls of Fire. So my mom got me the record. I locked the door in my room. I was about maybe 10 or 11. I had this big full-length mirror. I would just scream. I'd play a song, I'd put it on the record player, start at the beginning, and just scream and belt that baby out and jump all over my room. Okay? That's when I was about 10 or 11. I started playing, actually, my first gig when I was 14. that was like 1962, 3, whatever, for my friend's little girlfriend's birthday party. 6 little screaming girls sitting in front of us. But it was such a jazz. Whoa! Baby! Okay. So, you know, and then from there it's just been the same forever. And then once I discovered that if you played guitar in a band, it was real easy to get girls. And so then it was, and it's been that way since, you know, no time now.
My name is Logan. I was one of the ones that was famous
for
the conference.
For me, I'm confident, and the fact there weren't that as many women playing, I really love the fact that there's so many girls playing, amazing women drummers in the Northwest or probably everywhere, but just a lot of women are playing, and you know, it's just really weird to get up on stage, and it just takes different people a while to get comfortable with it. I happen to be one of them. That was kind of my only hang-up. Otherwise, I've always dreamed about being up on stage and doing something, and it's a fear overcome and a dream fulfilled for me. I'm glad we were able to try it.
Yeah, luckily we worked out most of the bugs before we started this band.
Well, yeah, way on it, way back.
A couple of my first shows, my crappy teenage punk bands, I'm like, I'm never doing this again. And now, like, several thousand shows and 20-some years later, I don't think I can stop.
I'm always nervous. Yeah. I mean, I don't know what it is. It's just weird. Before I gotta play, I'll be nervous up to the time I get on stage, and I'm also very claustrophobic, so I cannot stand to be in like an audience where only millions of people. I just drives me crazy. But for some reason, being on stage, once I'm on stage, I'm fine. But before I get on stage, I'm nervous, I've got butterflies, and then, oh, God. And I worry about whether I can remember the songs, you know, on and on and on. But something just takes over when I get on stage. I just don't worry about anything anymore. It's fun. But real self-conscious before then, you know.
Guys,
what grade are you in?
Let's see. I think I'm in 42nd grade. I'm a few years behind. But many of them may not know, but you guys really do it yourself, epic individuals. I mean, you produce your own recordings, you cut your own recordings, you do a lot of your own promotion. And I'm not sure about distribution, but I'm sure if you're able to, you do that. How do you view the digital revolution? Because I know that affects the distribution of your music, and it even could affect the recording of your music.
Well, as far as recording, you see that makes things a lot easier. You know, even when I started out, I mean, I'm a lot younger than these guys, but even when I started out recording, they were still having to cut the tape physically with a razor and tape it back together to get the songs together. And yeah, you'd spend so many hours in the studio and so much time and money and frustration just piecing this stuff together. And now it's just Pro Tools on a computer. It's, I don't know. I mean, I think, especially for the style of music we play, it doesn't make that. I mean, we prefer analog, you know.
Yeah,
recording to analog.
We recorded an analog for this second LP that's going to come out. And then part of it was mixed off the tape with the help of Pro Tools. Anyway, I think it's kind of a good balance. I'm really amazed with the whole internet thing, and I know everybody worries about music getting downloaded and all this stuff, but unless you're a major band, for all the smaller bands on our level and whatever, it's a way to get your name out there, your music out there, and the internet has been really amazing. What used to take, you know, years of corresponding with friends through the mail or faxing people, which was expensive, or this or that, the fact that communication is right there and people can offer all over the world look up on a MySpace or websites or whatever and see what somebody's up to, where you're playing, this and that. It's incredible how much easier it makes everything.
When you were asking about what you should do with country, or it doesn't really matter what music, the internet is totally great. Just make a recording and get somebody, if you don't do it yourself, put it on an MP3 or something that somebody can download. Get a couple of your songs together. Do a MySpace shot. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, I mean, personally, I'm all for downloading it. Even if it frustrates the majors, you know?
That's the way it goes.
If some of these guys can't afford their, you know, second or third mansions or whatever, you know, it's destroying the music industry. That's like, that's not true. If you go out on the road and can actually do your job, you know, you're still going to make money. And, I don't know.
When's that new record coming out?
February 2nd.
Yeah.
Mississippi Records is planning on doing a thing that Fred and I did right before Dead Moon called Range Brass that was never released. And I'm sure eventually we'll end up doing that third brass album as well. But that'll be a bit down the line. Yeah, that's really amazing. It's great. Right? People are digging it even at this point.
Yeah, that's
cool.
My name's Nigel. I was just wondering what some of you ladies think that is your relation to everyone here.
What is our relation? The coolest relation is that we've been that age, sitting in a seat listening to somebody older. You will be doing this again for somebody. What's cool about any age in your life is there's always somebody older than you and somebody younger. You've always got something.